your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Yeehaw, boys and girls. Thank you so much for being here. Oh, what a beautiful day and a beautiful weekend. There was all kinds of things for you to be doing out there. I hope you enjoyed what you did. And a shout out to the folks at Harrisonburg on 95.1. Hopefully you have learned all the fun things that happen here on WNRN. Our guest today, Dr. Michael Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm well. And yep. You had a good weekend?
I have had a good weekend. Yeah.
We chatted about how we didn't see one another, but we were both at the Tops of the Hops Beer Festival.
Yep. It was a pretty thick crowd, so it's not surprising we didn't see each other.
Well, it was a pretty thick crowd. But nonetheless, hopefully that will... I enjoyed everything that we did, and hopefully they'll do that again next year. But there were all kinds of things happening here in Charlottesville. There was the West Main Street party. There were a couple things that got canceled and moved from yesterday until today. But the weather, wonderful, and hopefully you have found something to make your weekend fun. 11:02 here on the wake-up call. We're going to get started. Dr. Feetz, a veterinarian, get ready. Dial up with your questions. It's not a lot of times when you can get a little free help from your pet. And a lot of this is due to Hatter & Sons Incorporated. They're allowing us to be on the air today. They specialize in carpentry and cabinets with several lines of semi-custom cabinetry and a designer with over 35 years of design and installation experience. Hatter & Sons can help you transform your vision into reality. You can visit their showroom near Wintergreen, or you can call them 540-943-9992. You can call us, 296. No, that's not right. I'm ready to give you my home phone number. I'm not home. I will be later. You can call me there if you'd like. Call us here at the station between 11:03 and noon, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number, 877-WNRN-ROCKS, 979-0919. We are going to be Ask the Vet, Dr. Michael Feetz here from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Dial us up. I sent out an email to friends before the week started and asked them to send some. I've got a couple here that friends sent along. I've got some topics in general to talk about. Feel free to add in to the fun. Dr. Feetz, so here's something that that made me laugh when I got this one back. This is not me. This is a friend. My cat licks my face in the middle of the night. Why and how to stop it?
Well, because he loves you.
Okay. Yeah. If you heard that, your cat loves you.
Yeah. You should be happy. I have a lot of clients who tell me their cats lick their face or chew their earlobes or other things that we find, I guess, obnoxious when we're trying to sleep. Usually it's either attention getting, they want to be fed, or otherwise it's just how they're expressing their interest in you. But it's understandable if it's annoying if you're trying to get some sleep. There's not a lot other than keeping them out of the room to get them to not do that. I've had some people have some success, especially if the cats were going after their earlobes, putting things that taste bad on their earlobes to try and make it a less enticing experience for the cat, I guess. But most people aren't too keen on putting bad tasting things on their face, so it doesn't work as well as you'd like. Yeah.
So what I'm getting from that is it's not. People whether it's true or not, and this is a question right after this. Like people say, your dog licks your hand because of the salt. I think this isn't where the cat is licking your face because something to do with nutrition or chemicals in their body or anything like that.
No, and even dogs licking you is usually not, it's a social thing more than a, you know, I mean, obviously if you've been eating food, they'll lick your hands because it tastes good, but it's a social thing otherwise.
And I also, read somewhere, because I went online to bring this up, and somewhere online, and of course you can find things that are completely true and complete garbage.
Not on the internet.
About how this was a way that a cat proved it's the leader of the house was by licking you.
I don't think cats really do that. Not yet. I think that's more a canine thing, that you know, pack mentality, where one animal is the leader and the rest are subservient to the alpha dog. Cats are a little bit more independent than that. I don't think it's an assertion of dominance.
All right, dial up with your question. 979-0919. Sean McCord here today to help get us all through the hour with Dr. Michael Feetz on the Ask Your Vet. Dr. Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital here in Charlottesville, Virginia. Where's one of those? Okay, here's one that I had somebody hand me. What do you recommend for dry feet? It doesn't say cat or dog. What do you recommend for dry feet?
I guess it depends on what you mean by dry. I mean, certainly some dogs, especially in the drier months in the winter, their pads can dry out and crack, and that can be a problem. You know, just like, you know, we chap and chafe in the winter. You can use the same sorts of things that we use. You can use, you know, Vaseline or anything along those lines to kind of keep them protected. I think the side effect of doing that is the dog leaves little greasy footprints all over the place. You know, same thing for hand lotions and things like that. You know, most people don't like doing it because you get paw prints on everything. Yeah, you know, usually you're left with the same sorts of things we do when we're dried out. You put things on, you have to put things on it to help. I'd try with that. You might want to let the dog outside for a while once it's on the feet. People will do that in the winter also for road salt and things like that that can burn a dog's feet during a walk.
You can also send us a question by instant message, WNRN Studio in the AOL system, if you have an instant message that you'd like to send. Along with putting something on the animal, you mentioned Vaseline, et cetera. I had someone tell me that, and Lazarus is here with us today. Many regular listeners are well aware of Lazarus, and Dr. Feetz is where we take Lazarus, where Lazarus likes to go. He had a little, I don't know if it was a scab or something, but he had a little a little cut kind of thing on his back hip, and someone said, just put some Neosporin on it.
If it's minor enough, you can do that. You know, you use your own judgment.
I mean, it wasn't even bleeding. It just, you know, had some, you know, some of that where you go, ooh, what is that?
Yeah, I think that's fine. You know, as long as it's not a full-out abscess or puncture wound or something that needs more aggressive treatment. You can largely treat wounds in animals the way you would on you. I mean, anytime I take my own dog to the dog park, he comes back with a few scrapes and so on, and it doesn't mean he needs to be rushed for more aggressive medical care. But
they're not going to lick that off. It's not bad for them for their tongue.
In the small amount that you use it shouldn't be particularly bad. If you were really overdoing it, I wouldn't want them to, you know, consume large quantities of it. But otherwise, you can use things like that. Some dogs will lick it off, which might make it pointless. And a lot of those things will heal without anything, not even the Neosporin. They'll just heal up.
All right, here's our first call today, but they've passed along their question. Doug wants to know if it is safe to put a flea collar on a semi-outdoor cat.
So long as I assume we're talking about safe for the cat, and as long as the packaging says it's intended for use in cats, you should be okay. For the most part, flea collars have kind of fallen by the wayside. There's just better ways of preventing and managing fleas at this point. But, you know, if the cat doesn't have a major flea problem, and that just seems to be the easiest, most convenient way to do it, it should be fine. Just make sure you read the packaging carefully. A lot of the flea products that used to be used and are still available over the counter can actually be very toxic to cats. And the packages are usually labeled very clearly, but you know, if you're rushing through the pet section, sometimes people don't notice. I've had cats coming in having seizures and so on from being put on the wrong products.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and that's because it's too strong for that?
It's not a matter of strength. It's just their unique reaction to that medication. You know, across different species, every species handles things differently, and there are plenty of things that are appropriate for dogs and not appropriate for cats, and vice versa. It's one of the, you know, challenges we have, a lot of things that are over the counter and generally considered safe in people, at least at the doses we take them, are can be dangerous to animals. Cats are unique in just how their biology works. A lot of the, you know, things like aspirin and Advil and drugs like that can actually be very dangerous to cats, which is why anytime you're going to give anything to your pet, it's best to call a veterinarian and just make sure that it's okay.
979-0919, call up like Doug, 1-877-WNRN rocks. Dr. Michael Feetz here from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Call up with your question. It's not often that you can call up and ask your pet question. For no charge today, I may get billed for this for the hour,
yeah.
But we'll see how it goes for others. instead of while we wait for our next specific question, I had someone point out to me that, and I want to say it's New York, but that may not be accurate, how veterinarians have been asked to pass along information to the police when they see animals that have been abused, because the thought process is that if the human abuses the animal, mm-hmm. that they might or will now or in the future abuse a child or a wife or someone.
Right. Which certainly happens. I mean, you know, I think it's pretty well established that, you know, mistreatment of animals earlier on can result in other problems later. Even if that weren't the case, the mistreatment of the animal would be a problem to begin with. To my knowledge, you may be right. I don't know if something's happened in New York that makes that an official policy. It gets problematic in other places. I mean, animal abuse is terrible and it's sad. Actually convicting people on animal abuse can be tricky. There's no, at least in this state, there's no protection if you do go after someone for animal abuse. You know, the analog in human medicine.
What do you mean there's no protection?
Sure. The analog in human medicine would be a pediatrician who's legally indemnified against countersuit or anything. You know, if a pediatrician sees a child that's been abused, they mandatorily have to report it. And as a result, they're protected. It's a legal requirement for them to report it. And if it turns out they're wrong in their assumption, they're not under any legal fire for the mistake. That's not true as far as I'm aware.
So if I brought Lazarus to you for the first time and said, no, the scars and the, you know, and obviously he's been hurt.
Right.
I didn't do that.
Right.
That's how I found him and picked him up.
Sure.
But you might choose, if you weren't so sure.
Sure.
You might.
I could say something fishy is going on.
But then
here.
I could sue you.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to go to court and spend money on my lawyer.
Right. I imagine most people wouldn't. But you know, it also.
But I'm a jerk sometimes.
I've seen evidence of that.
Lazarus reports that after he had his teeth pulled. Oh my gosh. All right. Let's see. We got a call. I think I got all the phone buttons pushed. We got Ashley from Charlottesville. Hi, Ashley.
Hello.
Hi. Question for Dr. Feetz.
Pretty basic. I'm just wondering if there are some dogs whose foot pads never toughen up. I have a 40-pound mixed breed, mixed lab, and we take her out on walks and hikes and whatnot, but it seems like on the longer hikes she always has really raw foot pads.
Seems
like she shouldn't after all this time.
Yeah, I mean, most dogs have fairly well calloused foot pads, and they were obviously intended to bear weight and take some degree of abuse. I do see a lot of dogs, especially in the summer, will burn their feet on hot pavement and things like that. So things like that may be going on. Otherwise, she may just have unusually sensitive pads. Whether or not that's just a characteristic of her feet or an actual, you know, defect, I don't know without seeing the feet, but they do sell pretty great you know, boots and things. People laugh when they hear it, but other than the kind of makeshift little rubber booties they sell for snow and things like that, they sell full out hiking boots for dogs, and yours might benefit from wearing something like that.
I thought about actually getting her the boot. I mean, we got her the plastic one for the wintertime, and that worked well. But I've actually never seen anybody else out on our hikes with hiking boots on a dog.
Right,
I thought that would just look ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, most dogs really don't need it. You know, if she's one of the few dogs that would benefit from it, you could certainly give it a shot. I don't, you know, when I take my own dog hiking, he doesn't wear boots, but I haven't had this problem. The other thing you can try, my own dog, this is also a little bit laughable to people that don't like dogs, but he's got a backpack that he wears when we go out for hikes. And
is he carrying your water?
He carries his water.
I actually didn't have her carrying the water. I had the other one carry the water, and he does great. He never has sensitive feet or anything.
Yeah.
And he's the one that carries the water.
Well, and if you slowly increase the weight, you might be able to get her feet to toughen up gradually rather than in these bigger spurts when you go hiking. I know with my own dog on shorter walks, I'll gradually just even just throw some books in the bag just to gradually weight it so he gets used to carrying the weight until he can tolerate a little bit more.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Ashley. Thank you very much. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, and WNRN Studio. We just got a question that way. It says, Dr. Feetz, can we use Frontline more than once a month? And for those who don't know Frontline, but Frontline is to help keep insects and ticks.
It's one of the common flea and tick preventatives. The short answer is yes. I would certainly check with your veterinarian if you're using it really often. There may be other reasons you're having flea or tick problems if there's anything wrong with how the medication is being used. But I've had some dogs in more stubborn areas where we'll use it every 3 weeks or so. If it seems to be losing effectiveness, owners are finding more ticks towards the end of the month, that should be fine.
But what's the and granted, I'm sure it changes from animal to animal.
Sure.
But so instead of 4 weeks,
right,
3 weeks, but what if I wanted you to do it every 2 weeks? Is there a point where I need to say, wait a minute, I think maybe we need to change from Frontline,
right,
to the other similar different name, from the Coke to the Pepsi kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I don't have any particular concerns about resistance issues or anything like that, but there may be something unique in that circumstance that's allowing the problem to persist. I mean, particularly with fleas, in a lot of cases, you dig a little bit further and you find out there's another animal that frequents the house that is not protected and things like that. So often it's not a matter of the product not working as much as there's some other element to the case that's not known. But otherwise, using it more frequently, as long as you're not, going over the top and you're putting it on every week or so, because at that point, you're better off finding out what else is wrong.
Yeah. All right, 979-0919. I see we just got a call. Don't forget the toll-free number, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And we have already gotten something by studio line. WNRN Studio is an instant message. Our guest today, Dr. Michael Feetz from Charlottesville's Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Call the vet, ask your pet question. All right, Dr. Feetz, here's an anonymous question. This person has a dog who likes... all right.
I'm in for it.
Yeah. Well, I'm the one who has to read it.
I'll have to answer it.
Has a dog who likes to hump everything.
Yeah.
Will getting him neutered help?
It may or may not. There's no simple answer to that. I mean, certainly it's recommended at that point for reasons other than the humping. But depending how old the dog is, it may have become very ingrained behavior at this point, and you may not see as much improvement as you'd like. But certainly it's recommended as a step in solving that problem. But that can be tough if it's already become an ingrained behavior.
Ingrained behavior.
Yep.
Yes. Please don't call just to ask fun, smarty questions. But if that's a true question,
That's a legitimate thing.
Right. Yeah. And because I'm sure, as someone mm-hmm. who owns a dog and mm-hmm. who spent a fair amount of time mm-hmm. at the shelters
yeah.
in this area, and as someone who sees so many animals, getting them neutered and spayed is
correct.
An important part of what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
There are far too many animals in the shelters.
Yeah, there really are. It's sad every time you go to the SPCA and just see the how many there are. Yeah.
I see there's another call coming in. But so Lazarus is actually like laying in the floor next to your feet. And he shakes his head a lot. And people have told me that's because uh-huh. as a hound dog, they right. have big droopy ears. And so that's just part of their behavior. Is that all it is?
No, there's no dog where it should just be part of their behavior. I mean, it's possible once in a while if one of their ears falls funny, they'll shake their head to just get it back into position. But if that's happening more than sporadically, you've got to think their ears are itching for whatever reason, be it an ear infection or if a dog has more generalized allergies and their ears itch, they might be shaking their head. But I worry about it in especially floppier-eared dogs, because there's risk if they do that a lot, if they're either scratching at their ears or shaking their head a lot, they can actually rupture blood vessels in the ears and develop a hematoma in the ear, which typically requires surgery to fix. So if it really seems excessive, it's usually worth figuring out what the underlying reason for it is.
How do you deal, mm-hmm. as a veterinarian, how do you deal with putting an animal mm-hmm. to sleep mm-hmm. and then returning to the next, just going on to the next appointment?
Yeah, I think, and obviously it's certainly one of the saddest things I have to do on a fairly frequent basis in my job. And it's not to say that you get disconnected from it. I think people in any kind of job along those lines, be it, you know, human doctors that deal with death or suffering on a daily basis, or we could probably, you know, come up with lists of careers that involve seeing those sorts of things. I think you do learn to compartmentalize a little bit. And it's, you know, you feel it when you do it. And then you move on because you kind of have to. I think it does affect us. I think it really does.
I mean, do you go home and mm-hmm. that bothers you for the rest of the day the rest of the week?
I've certainly had cases where it did. You know, I just, like any other job, I mean, some clients and patients I know better than others. Either I've been seeing them for longer or things like that. And it affects you. There's days where you go home and you just don't want to do anything else. Yeah.
For those who might remember my friend Sarah and mm-hmm. her dog Zephyr, and Dr. Feetz was the veterinarian who somehow brought Zephyr back to life after being shot. Dial us up, 979-0919-1877, WNRN Rocks. Dr. Michael Feetz here from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy today. Highs in the upper 70s. 60% chance of showers in Richmond. Clear tonight. Lows in the low 50s. A little warmer in Richmond tonight. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs 80 to 85. Cooler over the mountains. Right now, pretty nice out there. 75 in the valley. 76 in Lynchburg. 66 in Richmond. 69 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And there are lots of radio stations and other music sources out there. You know that because of programs like WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. But it's only because of folks who give us their donation, like Barbara Norton, Donna Rigney and Irene Bullock did this past spring. It's also because of program underwriters like Hampton Inn and Suites, Nelson Farmers Market. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about us here and all the other programs you like on WNRN. Be sure to support us in just a couple weeks at the end of September for the fund drive, or come online, WNRN.org, to see how you can help. We also need folks to come in and answer the phones. And also folks at Sugar Snap, allowing us to be on air. They offer gently used baby and kids items such as shoes, nursing pillows, maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find diapers, diaper bags, nursery gear, and locally made items. They have a kid-friendly play area, and you can find them at Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter, more at sugarsnapconsignment.com, or at the store in Shoppers World Court. All right, back in action with Dr. Michael Feetz. Let's see, find another one of these questions that I had from people beforehand. I read somewhere that rawhide bones can be harmful to dogs. Is that true? These are the things. They're in every grocery store. They're in every pet store.
As a general rule, not particularly.
Not particularly
bad. My own dog uses rawhides and likes them quite a bit. There may be two things we're referring to here. One, certainly anything that a dog puts in its mouth can become a choking hazard or something like that. So I usually try and recommend that you're there to monitor them while they have it. A lot of times they get worn down to those tiny little bits of rawhide that can be an issue if the dog, you know, accidentally swallows it whole
it
or brings
small.
It in.
Like, yeah. Like for your kid, you're supposed to, right. You're not supposed to give them circular hot dog pieces.
Right, exactly, yeah. And then otherwise, I think there was an issue fairly recently, although got to be maybe about a year ago now, where some were found to be tainted. I think some were tainted with formaldehyde or something like that. But, you know, issues of toxins sneaking into supply lines are kind of isolated things. I mean, certainly they're sad and they're a problem, but I'm not worried about it at the moment.
979-0919. That phone line's open. I see where the toll-free number is currently busy, but dial it again in just a moment. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Whether you're in Harrisonburg or Lynchburg, Lovingston, Richmond, dial us up. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Questions for Dr. Michael Feetz, and I see one of the lines going off right there. He is a veterinarian at the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Feetz, you've been doing this how long now?
7 years.
7 years. Mm-hmm. What do you see on a regular basis mm-hmm. that you wish pets did or that pet owners did differently?
Huh.
I mean, I take my dog uh-huh. To Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
Friends take their animals to Georgetown.
Right.
And so we're not asking you to specifically point out,
these people
at Georgetown wish they did this. But you've been, mm-hmm. I mean, you went to school, right? So you were doing some work in other places.
Sure.
What do you wish that pet owners did differently?
That's a tough one. It's very broad. I can't think
answer it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any, one thing that I see people do repeatedly that worries me. I think, there's little frustrations in the job, certainly. You have a lot of cases that, should have got better, but, you find out, we only gave half the course of medication or things like that. I think, compliance gets to be an issue in any medical profession, I imagine. Other than that, no, there's no particular annoyances that grate on me on a daily basis.
Are there issues with maybe with food? Are there issues with you mentioned medicine. Does mm-hmm. People do their front line every month, but not as often as but they don't do it every month, even though they're supposed to. I would think that there must be things out there that, gosh, if people just remembered or chose to do this,
right? I'd
we
say
could take 10% out of the people who came at 10% of our appointments.
I mean, certainly, going into simple preventative things, it's always sad when I see a dog with heartworm or something that's potentially fatal that could have been prevented easily. People just have lapses of memory and forget to give preventative every month, and then the poor dog has to go through the treatment for heartworm disease, which is both expensive and not particularly fun to deal with.
That's awful.
Yeah, and so it's things like that, I suppose. But most of those are lapses of memory. I mean, they're not done with any malice. They're just accidents. I think the other thing in medicine, to some extent, treating things is a little bit of the process of narrowing down what's wrong. So you have an animal come in with a problem and you cover a lot of the simple bases. And then if that's not working, you move on to other things. And if you're not confident that the treatment plan was followed, then things haven't really been ruled out. So sometimes you deal with frustrations along those lines where you're just still not sure what's really left in front of you because you're not sure you've ruled other things out yet.
I got a question here. Obviously several people are calling, but giving their questions in some anonymous way or not coming on air. And you can do either way. 979-0919 is available. Dial us up. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll free. Also open. Call up with your question on air, off air. And I see one of those lines is ringing now. How old should a puppy be before they get their teeth in and stop chewing everything?
They may not stop chewing everything just because their teeth are in, but so typically between 4 and 6 months they go through the process of shedding their baby teeth and growing in their adult teeth, which is a welcome thing for most puppy owners because the adult teeth are far less sharp than the puppy ones, so you don't have those telltale puppy owner lacerations down your arm anymore. You still want to be consistent throughout that entire process with, letting the dog know what's okay to chew and what isn't. Because for some dogs, I mean, their adult teeth will come in and they'll still be chewing everything.
We mentioned early, mm-hmm. just as a side thing, about Lazarus having teeth pulled.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, let's take this. I'll come back to Lazarus's teeth.
Sure.
Let's see. We got a call from Peggy in Lynchburg. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, how are you doing today?
We're well. Turn your radio down just a touch in the back.
How's that?
Wonderful. And your question for Dr. Feetz?
Well, I just became aware that there is a vaccine for Lyme's disease.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a couple dogs die from this, actually, and now one was diagnosed as being possible and positive, you know, being a carrier and everything. Mm-hmm. So he's been given the vaccine and, I mean, the, you know, medication, the antibiotics to treat that.
Sure.
And then we were told that we could bring him back for a vaccine.
Yeah.
Is this something you would recommend for dogs overall in general, any dog that's outside?
Right. Yeah. You know, we take it a little bit on a risk basis. I think most veterinarians don't make the Lyme's vaccine part of routine protocols. And it's not to say we don't see a lot of it. We do see a lot of Lyme's disease in the area. Over the past few years, that's become more apparent just because Lyme's disease has been worked into the routine heartworm screening that's done for most dogs. So we find out most of these dogs are positive before the disease causes trouble. I always pause a moment when I hear about dogs dying of Lyme's disease, just because in a lot of cases, I think the Lyme's disease is an innocent bystander. It's not to say it can't be a fatal thing. I've seen dogs go into kidney failure from Lyme's disease, and it can be a mean disease. In most dogs, though, it's not. And most dogs, they'll develop an arthritis that alerts us to the disease. The dog starts limping around, and at that point, the disease is very treatable. And it seems, at least for what we know right now, most dogs with Lyme's disease deal with a milder thing than humans do when they contract Lyme's disease. So as a result, you know, the vaccination remains a little bit nebulous. If people feel comfortable with doing it, I have no particular qualms about it, but I still don't assume the dog is 100% protected. There is some debate about the efficacy of the vaccines and how trustworthy they are. So I still keep it on my list of possibilities when a dog comes in with the right symptoms.
Okay.
All right, Peggy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, dial us up. Phone lines open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, and WNRN Studio at the AOL Instant Message, and that's where this question comes from, Dr. Feetz, from Ellie. Something specific to look for when choosing dog food.
Mm-hmm.
Are the more expensive natural brands superior to the national brands?
Yeah, the short answer is no, not necessarily. I think a lot of the differences between diets are philosophical more than anything. I think, you know, some people want to know that what they're feeding is organic or you know, has other qualities that they're looking for. By and large, I generally, as long as you're avoiding anything that seems generic or questionable, I usually think people are okay. There are some dogs or cats that have particular medical problems that require a specific, you know, way of feeding them, special diets that prevent other problems. But for the most part, no. And I usually try to steer people away from feeling guilty when they go to the pet store and are encouraged to get the expensive food but leave with the less expensive one. You know, if the dog is growing properly, most of these foods are extremely well prepared and well balanced. So by and large, it's something you shouldn't worry too much about.
What about feeding the dog food the same thing? I mean, people always talk about, you know, I buy the exact same food, the exact same flavor for Lazarus all the time because people have told me that's best for the dietary finishing.
Right.
Is that true? Is Lazarus going, geez, will you please give me something else to eat?
I considering dogs will eat just about anything. I don't think they get upset that they're eating the same thing over and over again. But some people like to mix up the food a little bit. You often, when you switch foods, you'll deal with some transient upset. They might end up vomiting or having some diarrhea after the change. But that's why we usually recommend switching things slowly, you know, mixing them together for a few days, getting them used to the new one. But otherwise, you know, feeding a consistent thing is another way of limiting variability. So when I have a dog come in with a problem, if I know that they've been on the same diet for 6 years, it's typically one less thing to think about unless we're dealing with things like food allergies and things like that. I don't have to worry that, well, maybe this is because we changed the diet recently. So some stability in feeding is useful.
So Lazarus doesn't really care that he's having lamb flavored or chicken flavored or whatever all the time.
I doubt it. And actually, I worry sometimes if we change it too much, we might make these animals pickier. I deal with a lot of older cats that just go off eating, and it gets very difficult to find something they'll eat. And then they gradually whittle things off their list. They decide, I won't eat this, I won't eat this, I won't eat this. And then you're left wondering what in the world you can give them that they'll eat.
But what about what about supplements? I know friends who put a variety of things on the food. I'm not talking about, I know someone who used to put like, green beans, canned green beans mixed in with, mixed in with their food. And I have other friends who, you know, tear open the powder thing and sprinkle that on the food. What about that?
They don't certainly don't do any harm. For the most part, the diets that are available now are so well balanced that usually those things wind up being extraneous. People take vitamin supplements and so on because our diets are erratic. We don't eat the same thing from day to day, and it helps to have that kind of baseline of nutrition added to our diet. Although even then, if you're eating a balanced diet, it shouldn't theoretically be necessary. But with dog food and cat food, I'll usually recommend supplements either. I mean, certainly if the animal has a particular health reason to be on a supplement, then we'll use one. Otherwise, if we're doing a homemade diet, I'll often use supplements just to ensure that we're not accidentally leaving anything out. You mentioned green beans, and those are actually commonly used just to bulk up food so that we can get animals to lose weight. They feel like they're eating, but they're not taking in too many calories.
Tricky.
Yeah, we're clever.
Careful, Lazarus. Next time I go to Harris Teeter and find some green beans on sale. We are here at 11:35 on the wake-up call. Dr. Michael Feetz, veterinarian from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And I see one over in the corner. Another instant message question. You can find us WNRN Studio at the AOL site. And we can thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on air today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. brgtshirts.com. Again, dial us up, 979-0919. And the toll-free number for those a little further out, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. All right, Dr. Feetz, here's another little posted question that I'm getting from those who just want to ask it and sit back and listen. Mm-hmm. Our older cats have started peeing in hidden places and stinking up the house.
Yep.
What to do?
Well, the two most common things on that list, I mean, one may be as simple as a urinary tract infection, and it's certainly worth having some urine looked at to make sure that's not what's going on. Because if it's that, you know, a lot of times a course of antibiotics takes out the problem and you're back to living happily with your cats. If they're older, other things jump into the picture, and it's certainly possible. It's very common in cats as they age to go into degrees of kidney failure, and that can show as things like that. And otherwise, certainly other diseases like diabetes and so on can result in problems along those lines. So, you know, typically you look at the urine, you see if you've got an infection. If you do, you treat it, and if not, often we find ourselves doing blood work to see if there's some other disorder underlying the behavior. But if the cats are doing that, they should certainly be checked out.
All right. Let's see. We got Heather. Heather from Crozet. Heather, you there? I can barely hear you. Try one more time, Heather.
Oh, hi.
All right.
I'm here.
Question?
I have a six-month-old kitten. I adopted from the SPCA.
You said kitten?
And we have been through a battle with sneezing and upper respiratory infection.
Yeah.
And there's no discharge now, but he still constantly sneezes.
Yeah.
And we've tried lysine chews, and yeah, we've tried Fortiflora.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any tips or any helpful hints on how to keep them from sneezing constantly?
Yeah, I wish I did. These are difficult. You know, the ones that stick around like this are frequently viral infections, and some of those can even be permanent across the life of the cat. You'll see them wax and wane. A lot of these cats, as they mature a little bit and their immune systems really light up, can keep it under control for the most part, with occasional lapses during stressful periods or when they get older again. Others really deal with this as an ongoing thing, and it is frustrating. I have a lot of clients who struggle with this. You know, most of them resolve while the cats are still young, and then you're okay. So long as the sneezing is sporadic and not intense, and the cat is eating and drinking well, a lot of times it kind of just settles in as part of how that cat is, and then we respond appropriately when things seem to be flaring up.
All right, thank you so much, Heather. Enjoy your day. 11:39 on the wake up call. Dial us up, 877 WNRN Rocks, 979-0919.
You're You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, it's September, but don't stop your summer reading. This week there are the final two short story winners from The Hook competition. Sir Jim Baldy, the man who's disappeared from Bel Rio Restaurant's problems, had been stopped before with similar problems in 2008. And is Halsey Minor claiming bankruptcy? The Hook, wrinkle-free. And support for today's programming also coming from Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro, featuring male and female tattoo artists. Ben Around Tattoos has thousands of designs available and can create work from a design that you provide. Piercing, also available. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro, also at 701 West Main Street in Charlottesville. For more information, it's benaroundtattoos.com. All right, back in action with Dr. Michael Feetz. We were at one point, we were getting ready to ask you a question about dentistry.
Right.
Dentistry in dogs. Lazarus had
teeth.
Multiple teeth pulled.
Yeah.
Early on, I guess when I got him, he already had bad teeth, and Dr. Feetz and Dr. Peppard have both seen him from Georgetown, said that it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And sure enough, in February and in April, had teeth pulled. So what do you do to prevent problems from happening, and how in the world do you brush teeth on cats?
Carefully. Dental care in dogs and cats is similar to how it is in people, in that, routine brushing, and really, if not every day, then every other day. Less than that, you really reach a point of diminishing returns pretty quickly. We say that knowing that it's difficult to do in a lot of animals, in a lot of dogs certainly, and in most cats it can be an extreme challenge. And I don't mind confessing in public that I can brush neither my dog's nor my cat's teeth. They just sometimes don't make it easy. So you shouldn't feel guilty if they don't let you. But if it's possible, it helps a lot, and it saves you a lot of money and trouble later on, as far as more aggressive dental procedures on those animals.
Is there something you can give them? I mean, some crunchy thing that you can give them that actually is brushing their teeth while they enjoy it?
Not quite as well as
Can you and I get together and make a fortune by inventing something that works that way?
It'd be pretty amazing. Plenty of toys, have ridges and things that help clean a dog's teeth and are advertised that way. Otherwise, things like raw hides and similar chews can help clean a dog's teeth. Keeping animals on dry diets instead of canned and wet food can help clean their teeth. But, none of those really substitute for regular brushing. So while they help and maybe they'll slow things down and you'll hold off that day you need a dental by a couple years or whatever. Most dogs eventually do need something done, and which shouldn't be too much of a surprise. Even people that brush their teeth ostensibly twice a day still need to go in and have their teeth checked, make sure there's no problems happening in the roots underneath.
All right. 11:43. Dial us up with your question. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We had a call from Kristen in Charlottesville. She has a 4 and a 6-year-old, 4 and 6-year-old children, would like to get a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Recommend any breeds or resources to study further?
Sure. It always gets a little troublesome when you recommend specific breeds, just because while there's certainly tendencies and trends, they're not certain. In general, people find retrievers, be it Labradors or Goldens, are good family dogs. They're usually pleasant and fairly well-mannered, but they're big and they can knock children down even when they mean well. So then you look towards smaller dogs, and I don't think anything substitutes for actually meeting the dog and trying to get a sense of its personality. If you're looking to get a puppy, that's trickier because you're guessing based on a little bit less information. You meet the puppy and you sort of assess their personality a little bit and you try and guess, but obviously they grow up and things change. As an example, my own dog, who I found, he was about 4 months old at the SPCA. He's the sweetest dog in the world. As time went by in the past few months, he's developed a pretty troublesome aversion to men, which makes walking him difficult. He's afraid of people. We're working on it, and we've got a trainer, and we're doing what we need to do, but it's tough. You're always making guesses based on somewhat limited information, but, look at your total lifestyle and you know the size dog you can handle and otherwise you know the best thing to do is go out and meet some of these dogs. Going to the SPCA is a great resource too and probably be my first recommendation because you can meet these dogs. A lot of them are already full grown and you can get a really good sense of what their personality is. They can interact directly with the children and see how they do and then go from there.
All right. Another question that has come through from Instant Message again.
Very modern.
I'm telling you, I can go months. But apparently the pet owners do not want to be heard and have their voice heard. Sean is just writing down things on Post-its. 979-0919. Dial us up. Ask online. Ask anonymously by Post-it. Doesn't matter. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're listening in Richmond or Harrisonburg, you need a toll-free number. And WNRN Studio is the instant message way to reach us. This one from Instant Message. Our dog seems to have a lot of eye goop.
Eye goop.
How do you prevent that?
It depends on what's causing it. And I know that sounds like a useless answer, but you know, it may be an eye infection, which are usually very easy to treat. We just get them on some eye ointment, usually that resolves them fairly quickly. A lot of dogs, especially around this time of year, do deal with allergies and are more apt to wake up with you know a lot of stuff coming out of their eyes. And it varies a little bit breed to breed too. Some dogs, you know, with the kind of saggier eyes are more prone to developing that kind of thing. And if it's just a natural part of who they are, keeping it clean is about the best you can do.
I have a friend who's just been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Her dog, I guess she went through the the suggested mm-hmm. length of time
sure.
for the ointment, I mm-hmm. guess. Is that what they put mm-hmm. on there? And yesterday she made a comment about, you know, your goop is back. Why is your goop back? I just, you know, spent all this time trying to hold your head still
yeah.
every day to get uh-huh. you through that. So you don't think about pets mm-hmm. having allergies. Not in the same way. I mean, I have the,
right.
you know, the yellow dust bothers me when the oaks start
right.
doing their thing in April. But
dogs do have allergies. They tend to be a little different than human allergies in that they usually focus more on the dog being itchy than on the dog being congested and, you know, sinusy like we get. But there certainly are dogs that have respiratory allergies or will have, you know, an allergic conjunctivitis where their eyes produce more discharge. You know, going back to the eyes briefly, it's anytime there's anything going on with a dog's eyes, they should be checked just to make sure, because you don't get a lot of second chances with eyes. So you do want to rule out that it's anything more significant. And dogs do have, depending on the breed and the likelihood, certain problems with their eyes that can be taken care of completely. But going back to allergies, most dogs with allergies deal with itchy skin more than anything. That can be whether it's a food allergy or an environmental allergy or both. Just as with human allergies, those can be frustrating things to wrestle under control.
11:48 on the wake-up call. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Dr. Michael Feetz here. Ask your pet question for our vet today. We're talking about eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Lazarus,
mm-hmm.
blind in one eye,
mm-hmm.
poor seeing
poor in
his other eye.
Yeah.
What do you do? Are there specific suggestions?
Mm-hmm.
One of my fears is that at some point he
sure.
will be blind.
Sure.
But what are the things that you do for animals,
mm-hmm.
pets or cats?
Mm-hmm.
Dogs or cats who can't see well, right, pets or even cats, who can't see well and who are blind.
Right. Animals always amaze me when they go through this because I have plenty of blind patients and they do amazingly well. The biggest thing is just to keep their environment consistent so that there's no surprises. Speaking from my own experience, my own dog, who was knocking on 16 when he passed away last year, was blind for a good portion of the end of his life. A lot of it really was just keeping things consistent and making sure that the place is arranged to be safe. So if you have stairs, you know, putting up baby gates so the dog doesn't accidentally tumble down them. If there's a closet in the hallway, making sure you always leave the door closed. There were a few times where I had a memory lapse and my poor dog would think he had a nice open hallway and would walk headlong into a door. And otherwise little things, you know, leaving shoes around, leaving toys around. I mean, dogs trip over those things. It makes their life difficult. So a lot of it's just making things consistent and letting them know where it is. And it's pretty shocking how well they adapt. Some people don't know their dog is blind until I tell them, because the dog's been trotting around like nothing's wrong.
I think I don't, maybe even the last time you were on, I've had you on several times mm-hmm. now and about the same time of year,
yeah.
About how I heard a woman whose cats were mm-hmm. blind and uh-huh. what she did was she, when she moved, she put the box, what is it?
The litter box?
The litter box yeah. in the place where it was going to stay.
Right.
And then she put the cat there and mm-hmm. let them find themselves out from, mm-hmm. you know, from that space. But, how do you, you know, let the dog outside down the stairs. I mean, can the dog make his own little sort of numbers? Okay, from, you know, here's where the water bowl is, and
right.
I know it's X number of steps before I need to then take X number of steps down. Can they do that?
I don't know if they're counting steps or what, but they do. I don't think dogs really count, but they do. They seem to have a very strong geographic sense. They know where things are. You know, when it comes to things like steps, you know, if a dog really can't see, they probably shouldn't go on steps without you there to guide them down. Just because they can have a pretty nasty mistake. They just seem to know where things are.
All right,
they do have other senses that I think they help, you know.
He can't
you know.
Smell very well either.
Right, well,
the
yeah.
bear took a big chunk out of his nose, too.
Poor Lazarus.
Oh, and speaking of Lazarus, my friend Sarah from Levinson. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey. I have a question, Dr. Feeds. Mm-hmm. I have one of my cats has one eye.
Yeah.
And her eyeball that's missing, mm-hmm. You know, it's just a vacant eye socket,
right.
And I was wondering if it's better to have it sewn up or if it's okay just to leave it the way it is.
I'd say it depends on whether it's bothering her. Do you know how she lost it?
I have no. I think she was shot in the eye. She came that way.
Yeah, it certainly can be a vulnerable area, and without seeing it, I'm not sure how it managed to seal itself off. If the eye is still in there, I mean, it can be just a root of infection and things like that. I'd say for the time being, if she's comfortable and not having any trouble with it, I probably would leave well enough alone. But it wouldn't surprise me if trouble did set in, that it would be best to close things off.
Okie doke.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for calling, and hi to all the farm animals.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, 979-0919, if you'd like to call with a question for Dr. Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital, 979-0919. 1-877 WNRN rocks. Dr. Feed, somebody called a little while ago about getting a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Kristen called earlier about getting a dog with the kids. What about pets? Her animals her dogs were 4 and 6. The other kind of animals
right.
were 4 and 6, and talking about getting a dog to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you hear all kinds of stories about what to do with the dog when you bring in the young baby.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've talked about them being pack animals.
Right.
And now the baby is getting all the attention.
Sure.
Is that true that this is a serious problem, and how do you handle
it? Well, it's a big transition for the dog, and a lot of young families, if they're having children for the first time, you know, find that the dog kind of very quickly gets pushed to the background. Obviously, it's a lot of work and a lot of effort to have a baby. So, from the dog's end, certainly there can be some psychological difficulty in adjusting to the new home. But most dogs are pretty receptive to a baby being around. And as far as the dog and the children being together, certainly never unattended, and you need to introduce them slowly. Most dogs seem to know how to be gentle around babies. You just need to introduce them carefully and make sure you're always there to monitor things.
Is there a time frame when you...
Mm-hmm.
don't have to worry about it, and you can put the toddler on the floor and know that everything's okay?
Certainly not with a toddler.
You wait until the child can stand up and defend themselves?
And think rationally and be a responsible human, I think. Even with a dog that's always been good, never had a problem, never bit a fly, it's one of those things where even if the risk is low, the consequences are too high. You can't risk a child getting hurt.
Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for supporting us today. There you go. I see the phone ringing again. They are the headquarters for Back to School in Late Summer with a selection of North Face day packs, fleece jackets, and Keen sandals. You can also pick up your tickets for the Radical Reels Film Festival, which is going to be September 16th at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. You can also find them at Chesterfield Town Center and Lexington Commons in Richmond. Online, it's brms.com. All right, we got Brian in Richmond. Hey, Brian.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
Well, question.
Good, yeah. I have a it's a lab shepherd mix, and she's got a, I guess it would be considered a hot spot on her front of her paw.
Yeah.
Continues to lick. It's kind of like a raw area, and it's not, she doesn't allow it to heal because she's constantly licking it.
Right.
We've tried different types of food. Any thoughts as to what might be the cause of this?
Well, most of them, at least initially, if it's the only one she has, it's hard to know what started it initially. It could have been as simple as a bug bite. It could be a neurotic behavior where that's just a paw that she licks at when, you know, when she's bored or stressed out. Initially, they usually need to be wrestled under control medically first,
right.
Because they can get really well established. You know, it starts as just a hot spot, which is an area of sort of self-perpetuated inflammation where the dog keeps licking and that makes it worse. But eventually it thickens into what's called a granuloma, which is a really, those can be stubborn. They're very thick. They take a long time to resolve, and the dog really needs to leave it alone.
You think it might be allergic related, or Benadryl might help?
You can try some Benadryl, certainly check with your vet for a dose. But it usually doesn't have enough punch for situations like that. So in most cases, they need to go on bigger anti-inflammatories. There could be an allergy underlying it, although those are usually more generalized, and it'd be a little strange for the allergy to just be in one foot. If she does tend to lick all of her feet, though, then allergies kind of come into it as a possibility. You mentioned changing the food, and I'll just touch on it briefly. Dogs do frequently have dietary allergies. Those allergies tend to be very big things. They're allergic to chicken as a whole or beef as a whole. So a lot of times changing diets doesn't do much because you're just trading one company's chicken for another company's chicken. And they need to go on very specific hypoallergenic diets in order to calm it down. In a lot of dogs, even if they've got a dietary allergy, they've got an environmental one on top of it. So the diet change often won't bring us the results we want.
So it could be a number of issues. I know we had an older shepherd and she had a similar problem and that was she ended up with them all over her body. But the other thing, she is panting quite a bit and she seems to be a little bit anxious.
Yeah. Well, and in that case, I mean, if something else is stressing her out, be it an environmental stress or some underlying disease, she may be demonstrating that by licking at her foot, just like people chew at their nails when they're nervous. Dogs will frequently lick at their feet. And I do find it's frequently the front ones, and I don't know if it's just because it's right in front of their face or what, but they will do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, thanks for the call.
I appreciate your help.
All right, 11:57, time for one more call, maybe two if you're quick. 979-0919-1877-WNR. And Rocks, Dr. Michael Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. This is WNR in Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. I forget what word you said, but it made me think about holistic treatment.
Uh-huh.
What about things where the dog? Do you believe in acupuncture for dogs, or I have Rolfing
Right. This always puts me in a bit of a compromising position. Personally, no. I retain my skepticism about it. I don't have any problem with people pursuing those things, though, as long as they're not, replacing other treatments so much as adding to them. My skepticism is one thing, but I have no problem doing things that don't hurt, as long as they're part of a bigger treatment plan. And actually, I mean, taking the word holistic for what it is, if it's part of a bigger, well-rounded treatment plan, that's fine by me.
Okay. Yeah. We got time for one more quick question. Pets are getting older.
Mm-hmm.
from now till next, what's the most important thing to look for with a pet as it ages?
Honestly, it's hard. There's so many things. It's hard to say what would be the most important. I find with dogs, especially larger dogs, I don't think anything affects their quality of life as they age more than arthritis and just general pain. So looking for evidence that they're painful. Are they panting all the time? Is it hard for them to get up and sit down? And in cats, really any kind of change in behavior, particularly the urinary sort can alert people to kidney problems. But people know their animals very well. And I usually say if you see anything that seems unusual or off routine, then it may be worth looking into.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Dr. Michael Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. We all know the fundraiser's coming up in just a couple weeks. Get ready. Set a little money aside. I'll be needing you between 11 and 12. Drew Thompson, up next with Les Thames Perdue. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.